Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to a live interview tonight on Prophecy Keepers Radio. When the host says the coast is clear, please call in. This is Jasa Sagonie, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hi, this is Blue Water Live. We have a very special guest this evening. Dr. Stanley Krippner is a Rolling Thunder experiencer. You know, Rolling Thunder was kind of like a UFO. You experienced him. And anyway, we're going to have Mark Butcherding joining us here in a moment. There he is, Mark. You're on the air with us, and I'm just introducing Dr. Krippner. And we'll say hello, Dr. And should we call you Stanley, or what do you like to be called?
That's fine, yes.
Okay. And
less complicated.
Absolutely. Well, tell us about yourself, if you would, Stanley.
I'm a professor of psychology at Saybrook University in San Francisco, but about the same time that I began working with Saybrook, I was working with Rolling Thunder whenever he came to San Francisco, but also in other parts of the country, and on one occasion in Europe. And this book, The Voice of Rolling Thunder, tells a lot of stories about RT, his nickname, for obvious reasons. And, of course, I met him through my friend Mickey Hart of the Grateful Dead. So there are also Grateful Dead stories in the book because they had many interactions with Rolling Thunder. So the book is filled with stories, and you'd be surprised at some of the names that pop up from time to time.
Oh, absolutely. I read part of it a couple of months ago. It looks like a really good read, and I guess you co-authored it with one of his sons.
Sidian Morningstar is actually the grandson of Rolling Thunder.
Oh, that's right. Now, see, I know Mama.
And so, yeah, so the book actually served a number of purposes. You only met his grandfather a couple of times, and of course he was very, uh-huh. very young during those meetings. And when RT passed on, Sidian had virtually no contact with any of the people around his grandfather. And so the book serves a couple of purposes. It not only records stories about RT and some of his wisdom, but it gives Sidian a chance to discover his legacy. And as he went around the country interviewing people who are profiled in the book, he was also discovering a legacy that played an important role in his own formation.
Wow. Yeah. It's that would be exciting. I do know Red Wolf, and I guess, you know, as Mala's son, so he was probably a little bit closer, but
yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. RC had a large, you know, extended family, do you remember Everlight?
Yes, of course, sure.
She's a friend of mine, and
wow, yeah, she's featured in the book. She has many stories to tell, and she was very close to RT.
I never met her in person. I just corresponded with her for several years when she was out on your coast, and then she moved back east to New York, last I heard, and I still got her email.
And she's now in North Carolina.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, and
wow.
She's doing some very excellent work as a healer and a spiritual counselor in Asheville, North Carolina.
Really? Wow. Well, I'm going to
So if you'd like her email, you can
that'd be great.
Get it from me after the show is over, and I'm sure she would be delighted to hear from you again.
Yeah, because we just buried Walker Calhoun, who lived near Asheville. He was the last culture bearer for the traditionalist Eastern Cherokee, and we put together a website containing most of his beliefs, and they're at AmericanCherokeeAssociation.com. Reflects pretty well what he believed, but go ahead and tell us about it. I didn't get, like I said, I met him at the end of his life after he had lost the leg, and then before you launch into that, I had another Cherokee friend who lived in Gunnison, Colorado, and one weekend in January of 1997. All weekend long, we were trying to get a fire lit for an OC ceremony, sweat lodge ceremony, And all that weekend, we heard, you know, at 8,000 feet in the snow, hip deep snow, trying to get a sweat lodge ceremony going. We heard an owl, and he says something's up. And I got home, Monday morning, and heard that RT had walked west.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah,
yes, so. RT introduced me to the sweat lodge. I've had many sweats since that time, but my very first was with RT during a visit to his home in Carlin, Nevada. And that was quite an experience. We had to sweat to do a healing on a friend of mine who I had brought to Carlin, and RT said that her problem was so serious that he would need some help, but we had to go through purification before he would let us participate in the ceremony. And so we went into the sweat lodge and we sweated it out, and then we formulated a snake dance, and that helped give him the energy that he needed for the healing, which happened to work, by the way. That's one of the stories in the book, but it was quite an ordeal, and also quite exciting for everybody concerned.
Do you remember meeting Earth Thunder?
No, I didn't.
She is a lady, and about 1951, her ancestors had been living. They were the lost Cherokee that had gone to the Rocky Mountains that Sequoia was looking for. They were Wolf Clan people that they were living hunter-gatherer. They would live in the ice caves and the lava caves in the winter, and in the summer they move up into the Sawtooth Mountain range. But you know, that movie, Last of the Dogmen, was true. They just didn't have the tribe right. And
oh, really?
Amazing story. I interviewed her a couple of times on Prophecy Keepers Radio. She lives in Boise, and she was the only person that RT let doctor him when he to get his legs up under him again. They killed a coyote, doctored it, and then doctored RT with the coyote legs.
Well, then I've heard of her. Sure.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead and sorry to interrupt. I always tell guests I don't like to interrupt, but I always end up doing it anyway. So.
No, I was just going to say that when RT was critically ill with diabetes and gangrene in his leg, Mickey Hart and I flew up in a private plane that he had gotten from Bill Graham, the rock music impresario, and we were determined to get RT back to San Francisco so he could have help from Mickey's private physician, and RT was very, very resistant, and he didn't want to go. He felt that he could get all the help that he wanted from people around him right there in Nevada. So let me tell you, it was quite a dialogue and quite a job of persuasion to get him to California, get some help, and by that time it was almost too late. They had to amputate his leg. But that saved his life. It gave him several more years of life, and of course without that amputation and that medical treatment, you would never have met him.
That's right.
And the same goes for many other people who met him after he returned to Nevada, minus a leg, because he had many very robust years ahead of him.
Absolutely, because yeah, he made a couple of videos after that and did quite. I guess he did not want to. He would not. It was like a lot of traditionals. Publishing a book was a, you know, kind of a cultural suicide. It was unfortunate, and I can understand his reticence to leave Carlin because, you know, when you become a medicine man in the tradition that he was involved in, you promise to stay with the people until you're gone. So, but yeah, go ahead and yeah, we're anxious to hear more.
No, you're absolutely right. That's part of the tradition because when a community gives you the honor of naming you a medicine man or a medicine woman, you are linked with that community. And if you split from that community, you really have no right calling yourself a medicine person, because you have to have your roots in a community of some sort, the community that gave you that title and gave you that great honor. So I can see that point of view, and he was very reluctant to leave. And, you know, he did stay in California for a while, and he had a big birthday party in Santa Cruz that I went down for, and he was there, minus a leg, but other than that, in robust form and in good spirits. But then, you know, a few days after that, he told the people around him, "We've got to get out of Santa Cruz because something really bad is going to happen." So they piled into the van and went back to Carlin. And no sooner did they get back to Carlin, but the Loma Prieta earthquake struck Santa Cruz.
Wow.
You know, destroying a big segment of Santa Cruz, many buildings. And so Art, he was right. He got out just in time.
Wow.
And I was there. At his birthday party, and the folks told me about his leaving and his prediction that something bad was going to happen. Of course, he didn't know what it was, but they were sort of prepared then when the earthquake struck.
Hmm. That's other. Well, another of his friends that I'm sure you know is Chokosh Aho. I've interviewed her a couple of times. And she calls me nephew, and haven't spoke to her in a while, but she told the story of whenever RT needed to talk with Mad Bear. She said particularly one incident, they were in the Bay Area at her house, and he went out on the balcony and closed the sliding glass door, lit his pipe, and 15 minutes later, Mad Bear was knocking on the door. And after that, and people on the reservation up in New York were accustomed to seeing his a pickup truck on the side of the road, and they would just drive it home. And because he was able to travel without his suitcase, as they and Ted Silverhand told me that story. Ted's a member of the same nation as Mad Bear, and he's an active healing psychic reader.
Well, that's quite incredible. Rolling Thunder certainly uh-huh. thought the world of Mad Bear, and of course Mad Bear was one of his teachers, and he always acknowledged the people that he had learned medicine from and herbal work from and rituals from, and gave them a lot of the credit for what he was able to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Amazing person. Well, tell us. Don't stop now. And if you Mark Borcherding at some point would like to talk about your Mayan birth date. He's just a whiz kid, a wunderkind on this subject. And if you'd like to know about your Mayan birth date and have a reading, he'll tell you all about yourself and why you do what you do.
Well, he certainly is welcome
he's
to have
on the
any
line.
Of the information that he wants.
He's on the line with us now.
And
Mark, go ahead and are you there, Mark?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you want to go ahead and do something now, or?
Yeah, if you'd like to. Would you like to do that now, Dr. Krippner?
Well, I don't think that your interested listeners would like to hear too much about me, but I'll be happy to give him my birth date, and he can talk me during intermission or by email. I was born on October 4th, 1932.
Okay.
And that was 80 years ago, and I'm right in the middle of several birthday parties. You know, R.T. was very, very big on birthday parties.
Huh.
He didn't celebrate Christmas. He didn't celebrate Easter because he described himself as a pagan, and I think that was a good term for him, and I think pagan is a very wonderful tradition. There should be more pagans around that had as much faith and as much spirit as R.T. did. But he did make a very big thing of birthdays, and whenever a member of his family or community had a birthday, he just pulled out all the stops in terms of celebrating. And that's happening to me now. I've had 7 big birthday parties on both coasts of the United States, and I have a final birthday coming up, at the end of the year. So all of that is done in the spirit of Rolling Thunder, who really honored people's birthdays.
Well, that's going to fit in right in, because your birth in the Mayan Vulcan is going to connect both you and Rolling Thunder. And your birth in the Mayan, in the traditional Mayan day count, is a day called 8-Eek.
Oh, my gosh, he's an Eek.
And
I'm 9-Eek.
Yeah. Now, 8-Eek is the 8th day of the Eagle cycle. I believe.
Did you say the Eagle cycle?
Mm-hmm.
The Eagle cycle, which will be Rolling Thunder.
That certainly is, because Rolling Thunder is on the cover of our book with an eagle. And in the book, one of the people who knew Rolling Thunder and took the photograph tells this incredible story about how when he was visiting Rolling Thunder, a group of people found an eagle that had fallen out of the nest, and that eagle was yelling and squawking and screaming and couldn't get the eagle to stop, so they put the eagle in a bag and brought it to Rolling Thunder. And what he did was to just hold the bag and took the eagle out of the bag, and it calmed down. And then he said, "You can take my picture now," because Rolling Thunder was very careful about when and where he would have his picture taken. So that's the picture that ended up on the cover of the book. And after that picture was taken, that eagle had enough strength to fly back to the nest.
Wow.
Yeah, the eagle is very, very special to Rolling Thunder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Snake, too. But, Marco.
Your 8-Eek is composed of a couple of things, the number 8 and the Eek glyph. So I'll go give you a little bit of information about what each of those kind of mean. The number 8 has to do with things. It's the 8th day of a 13-day cycle, and it has to do with completions of energy in the material world. It would relate to the top of a pyramid, so if you ever go somewhere like that, you might feel good there. It also has to do with the number 8 tends to indication weighing and looking at all the things, all the evidence, all the facts, all the stuff, to reach a balance, especially in things that are considered issues of justice. They also tend to be good at organizing power. The whole thing about as above, so below, that type of stuff, for the purpose of harmony and balance. So that's a little bit about what the 8 is telling us. Now, the glyph, the Eek glyph itself, is relates to things like the wind, breathing, breath, communication, thinking, artistic stuff to some extent. It would also relate to the Quetzal and Quetzalcoatl.
Oh, that's remarkable.
And it's a lot of it's a lot of people on this tend to be people that are kind of spiritually oriented, but also like to communicate about spirit. They like to do that. So, and they tend to be a lot of times good at thinking too. So communicate it, spirit, think about stuff, pull a bunch of stuff together, organize it, and I think you and Blue Water sort of share that talent or skill.
Well,
I think you're probably right, sure.
AD could be.
By the way, I really enjoy pyramids. I've been to the pyramids in Egypt. I've been to many pyramids in Mexico. I've been to pyramids in Guatemala, in Belize, and even some newly discovered pyramids in Ecuador. So now I'm going to take your advice. I'm going to keep visiting pyramids.
So we're gonna do another reading, and this reading's going to be a little bit different in terms of it's going to involve three things. Two flows of time, the forward flow and the backward flow, and then the third component is going to be where the two, where those two time flows unify into a still point or a zero point. And this is going to, when I say these two flows, this is going to relate, I'll explain it maybe and bring something in that might mean something to you from your writing, a quote that you had in your writing called Dancing with the Trickster.
Oh, good heavens, you've really done your homework. You looked that up on my website.
Mark, good.
In it, you, at the very beginning, you start right off the bat, you say, if you want to face the Great One, you have to learn to dance in both directions. So we're getting ready to do that. So we'll go one direction. The two time flows are going to be forward and backward. So the forward is from your birth going forward into the next world cycle. And the other time flowing backward is coming from the next world cycle back into our world cycle. So, and then the third one will be the mixture of the two. So we'll do the first one. This is the forward time flow. And it's talking about things that have to do with being, things with binding will, purpose, discipline, service. A lot of things about serving, helping, and balancing things. Power, balance. So that power's coming up again, like we did with your e-glyph and balance and harmony and correct actions. So this is... saying, you know, from birth, as you went forward, you were you may have even had some of those skills already, but you were picking them up as you were moving. So things that had to do with purpose, service, balancing things, correct actions, and serving others and stuff was things that was moving along in your life probably.
Well, that's very inspirational to hear.
It would, and this one is a is connected with the color green. So it would go into the heart chakra. And so a lot of things about purpose and balance. So in the nutshell, it says your purpose is to help bring balance.
I think that's right on.
I really do.
On the other flow of time, moving back from the next world cycle into this one, and this is stuff that you, these types of energies and things probably have been maybe showing up in your life more recently and getting stronger, say, since around the year 1998, somewhere around there, or maybe before, a little bit after, somewhere in there going forward. And it's talking about unveiling things, teaching about transformation, things about how death is kind of a divine change. And this is in accordance with... community type things and cooperation in community communal type settings. It's pulling in eek energy here too from your eight eek that we talked about before with about breath, spirit, and prayer, especially when these things are combined with synchronizing movement or thought, movement of thought. It's going to connect to also to some crystal skull stuff coming up here, crystal skull types of things. So,
well, you know, I've seen several of the crystal skulls in museums, and I saw the famous crystal skull at the Museum of the American Indian, the branch in New York City, so I'm quite familiar with those artifacts, and of course they're magnificent.
So now we'll take these two things we're dancing around with on in both directions, and we're going to move them into one. And this kind of, this where these two unify, these two time flows unify into a zero point, this kind of symbolizes sort of a doorway or a bridge between the worlds of you or for you, both actually. And it's talking about reflecting, mirroring things, expanding orders, eternity of things, things having to do with light, especially a radial spiraling type of light. It also is pulling in and working with geek energy too, and it's also connected to something else. It's connected into, in the Mayan they call it Manik Kej, or deer energy for healing.
Well, that's
I
a pretty good
deer
hit, because the deer is one of my power animals, and we have deer right in the community where I live in California. It's not unusual for me to see a deer run across the road when I walk down to the bus stop in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And ho.
So the deer...
Yes, I see real life, honest-to-goodness deers at least once a month.
So the deer energy is significant. And I'll share a story, because your eek energy and Blue Otter's eek is the eek glyph looks like a T cross. And the Manik glyph sometimes looks like a deer, but also it sometimes looks like a hand. And we're going to combine all these things together, because there's a story about the person they call the great healer, or the lord of the wind and the water, because that relates to him. And there's a deer story. And it's a story, it's said to be a Cherokee story. And the great healer was out in the forest, in the woods, walking around, and he had his 12 students with him, and they were on the path, and this little baby deer was there, a little fawn, and maybe had some spots on it, so it may have been a spotted fawn, and it was alone. So the great healer went up to it, and they say he had a way of talking with animals, deer and sometimes jaguars, different animals. And but he apparently went over to this little deer, and he asked him where his mother was. And so the little deer turns around and starts going down, go off somewhere, and goes down a ways, and they find the mother there on the side, dead, with these, you know, scratch marks and wounds on her side. And the great healer kneels down beside her, and he moves his hands across her wounds. And as he does that, the wounds heal up. And once he's finished moving across them, she gets up. And one or more of his students looked at him and said, "Well, you know, great healer, great teacher, you know, why did you waste your power on an animal?" And he looked at him and he said, "In my great father's eyes, there is no good deed that is so small that it is not more valuable than the most precious jewel."
Oh, I agree with that. That's a great teaching.
So I thought I'd share a story with you.
Well, I know you're a little bit...
story.
I know you're a little bit surprised, but we do like to introduce guests to the Mayan calendar and give an idea of why they do what they do. And
that was a great addition to me. I really learned something from that discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been fulfilling the measure of your creation, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, nice of you to say that, and that's why Sidney and Morningstar and I thought this book was so important, to preserve some of Rolling Thunder's teachings and make it available to people who didn't have contact with him. But, you know, the amazing thing is that we're now hearing from people all over the country,
mm-hmm,
who did have contact with him and who have stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And so during his lifetime, he had personal contact probably with hundreds of people and made a difference in their lives. And then through his teachings and the video that you mentioned and other books and articles have been written about him. His teachings have reached thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people. Who knows how many people have been touched by him?
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Stanley, there's one other thing on your where those two time flows come together. There's one other connection I need to share with you.
Yes, sure.
It is also connected to the birth of one of the white buffaloes.
Really?
Specifically, the birth of the second, I believe the second or third one that was born in Janesville, Wisconsin, that was named Miracle.
Yes, I remember that birth, right. I'm very much interested in white buffaloes. I've been to a location in Arizona where they have half a dozen white buffaloes.
Uh-huh. Well,
very sacred area.
Mm-hmm. Oh, near Williams?
And the white buffaloes are treated very, very well, given a lot of space to wander and roam.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Well, that was the main thing, was just that is there's a relation or a connection there between his birth and that white buffalo's birth.
Well, we'll try and I know how irritating it is to get interrupted, so we'll try not to interrupt you, Stanley.
Oh, I don't mind interruptions at all, because I learned a great deal from this interchange.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fantastic how these things all come together, especially that white buffalo at the end, because I've been following white buffalo stories for most of my life, and it was quite a thrill when a friend took me to see a whole collection of white buffaloes at a special white buffalo farm.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, RT used to say, he said, not in my lifetime, he says, but in your lifetime, you're going to see the entire history of Native America rewritten. And that's happening. That's happening. Absolutely.
Sure, I think it is. Right.
He was an amazing, irascible, I don't know, he was a one-of-a-kind, unique person. He wasn't perfect, but, you know, nobody is, but... Wow, he changed my life, and it's just amazing the effect that he had on people. And go ahead, tell us more.
You're absolutely right. This is one phrase that I hear in the City and Morning Star, heard from people he interviewed about his grandfather, that their contact with RT really changed their life. Some of them went to Metatante, his spiritual community that he ran for a decade, with his wife, Spotted Fawn. Others just spent one session with him, part of one day with him, and that was enough to transform them in their point of view for the better.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, he did some very remarkable healings of body, mind, and spirit, and... He was very controversial, of course. He had his detractors. And yet, when people came in contact with him, it was an experience that I would never forget.
Uh-huh.
He could be very, very much in tune with nature. On one visit to Metatante, he took me late at night into the Nevada desert, and he started to hoot and make animal sounds. Of course, I didn't think anything of this because I've heard him do that before. But this time something happened that had not happened before. Once he was hooting, a band of coyote came out of the woods, and actually not out of the woods, out of the shrubs in the desert, and one coyote came right up to us, close enough for me to touch. And Rolling Thunder and that coyote had a conversation, hooting back and forth to each other. And then after the conversation, the coyote just left and joined the herd, and the herd left. And I said, RT, what was going on? And he said, well, you know, we have a pact with the coyotes. If we leave some food for them, they will not raid our hen house and do away with the chickens that lay the eggs if we need. And I talked with people at Metatonti, and they said, no, we've had no trouble with coyotes. They have never come near the chicken coop. They've never come close to the house where the hens are. We haven't lost a single chicken to coyotes. And that's quite remarkable, because this is actually coyote territory.
Mm-hmm. It sure is. It sure is. And later on, you know, if you had any dealings with Tom Laughlin, I don't know how early, you know, Billy Jack, if you have any memories about that. Of course, that
Oh, yes, I saw the Billy Jack films, so did Sidney, and the Billy Jack films were very important to him. And, you know, we did have Tom Laughlin's email, and we sent him email after email. We had a phone number. We phoned him. We wanted a statement from him for the book. We never got it.
Yeah, but, he's not answered mine either. He's been ill, but go ahead.
Well, there you are. That explains it. But we do mention the Billy Jack films in our book, and at the end of one of the films, Tom Laughlin actually gave Rolling Thunder his van, the van that was used, and that van lasted for years. In fact, that was the same van that Rolling Thunder drove off in, leaving Santa Cruz just before the Loma Prieta earthquake. And so that van has had many, many miles on it. Must have been very well constructed. And that was a souvenir from his days working as an advisor to the Billy Jack films.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are available on video, by the way. If any of your listeners
mm-hmm.
want to know what the Billy Jack films are all about, there's three or four of them, and you can get them all on video. Just check on Amazon.com. And also, as we said before, the Rolling Thunder videotapes are also available on Amazon.com.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And they're well worth watching. They were pretty well done and show interviews with him and dispensing his wisdom and people who have been touched by him in one way or another. I'm just glad that he did decide to go ahead and make some videotapes, because that gives people who have never met him really a sense of what it was like to have a conversation with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get the set from BillyJack.com.
Yes, you certainly can.
And Tom was actually in the process, Tom and his wife were in the process of making a sequel. And then she got very ill, and they've shelved that. But see, Tom, now you being a psychologist, I don't know whether you're aware of Tom's work, but he is the only person in the state of California that does not have a degree that's allowed to practice Jungian psychology.
I didn't know that.
That's a guy.
Pretty remarkable.
Quite a story, yeah. He's a real Renaissance man. He's interesting. And he like I said, he's I think he's, I'm not sure, but he's in his 90s.
Really?
I believe so. Yeah. And but they were going to make a sequel, and but that, like I said, that was shelved. And but there is some information at BillyJack.com, and you can buy the or you can buy the 3 DVD set. You see, the Billy Jack Goes to Washington never got in the theater.
It never got distributed, which is a shame. That's true.
And the story is that the first screening was at Lucy and Desi Arnaz's house.
Oh,
and,
really?
And there was a U.S. senator present, and when he saw what the movie was all about, he threw a hissy fit and said, "This movie will never see the light of day. You will." And he made some other threats, and he slammed the door on the way out of the mansion, and he actually didn't even wait for the electric gate to completely open before he knocked it down on the way out.
Good grief.
Yeah. Tom Laughlin talks about this on some of the videos that he's got up online.
Well, now, of course, we wouldn't be surprised or shocked at anything that went on Washington with politics.
Yep.
But, you know, here again, the Billy Jack film, Billy Jack Goes to Washington, was ahead of its time.
Yep.
And I'm glad that people can still get that, you know, through the Internet. And I think that it makes a pretty good point.
They've been playing it late nights on, from time to time, you'll see it up on cable. All three
I think
of
you're
them.
Right, yes.
All three mm-hmm. of them. Absolutely amazing. Did you see what you guys started? You know, you guys really did it work, and a lot of the folks in your generation, you know, didn't live to see it come to fruition, but, you know, we're down to the third generation now.
Well, we are, and of course, many people don't know what we're talking about when we say the Billy Jack films, but Billy Jack was a character in the film played by Tom Laughlin, who also directed the movie. And it was loosely based on Rolling Thunder's early life.
Uh-huh.
Because, like Billy Jack, he was not pure Native American. He was not pure Cherokee.
Uh-huh.
And we have traced his lineage as best we can in the book, especially the Native American lineage in terms of his father and his grandfather. And there's a lot of information that's sort of been lost over the years. But Tom Laughlin picked up the information that he could. And so Rolling Thunder was very happy to be an advisor on the movie, and he actually has a cameo role
uh-huh.
in two of the movies. In one of the movies, the very first one, all that you see is a rattlesnake biting him as part of a ceremony.
Uh-huh.
And that is a real rattlesnake and a real bite, because part of Rolling Thunder's training was to take small bits of venom and build up an immunity to rattlesnakes and other poisonous creatures so that he could withstand a poisonous bite if he was in the woods or the desert or some dangerous place.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was just too good of an opportunity for Tom Laughlin to let slip by. And so when the rattlesnake bites the Billy Jack character in the film, it's really Rolling Thunder that it's biting.
Uh-huh. Yeah, R.T., of course, was Paint Clan, and he grew up in the Kaimichi Mountains. You see, now I'm a Chickamauga Cherokee myself, and if people are unfamiliar with the history, the Chickamauga were the warrior guardians of the Cherokee Nation. They were the faction that went to the southern part of the nation, actually left the nation because the... most Cherokees wanted to assimilate. They love white people. They love white technology. But the chiefs at that time knew that we were going to completely lose our culture. Like Dragon Canoe, his son-in-law Tecumseh carried on his work, and of course. But the Chickamauga Cherokee never, we didn't go to the fort, and we never enrolled. So now we have Cherokees pointing at us and saying, you're fakes, you're frauds, and so forth. When you know, we were the real deal. We the traditionalist Cherokee started leaving the nation in the east in as early as 1730 with the Treaty of Holston. And a lot of them filtered down. But one-third of the nation had fully moved to... northeastern Arkansas to the second Cherokee reservation. The first one was here in south central Tennessee. But we, you know, we're disenfranchised as far as the nation goes, but we have bits and pieces of the culture. So Rolling Thunder probably would have been shot in the Cherokee Nation, but he lived down in the Muscogee Nation. Probably there were a lot of Chickamaugas that moved into Oklahoma and intermarried with the Muscogee Creek, and he grew up in he was put up in the Kaimichi Mountains, I believe, at age 13, with nothing but a knife for a year, and had to take care of himself. And do you know any more about that story?
Yes, I've heard that story. You know, we couldn't get enough verification on that or enough details on that to put
uh-huh.
it in the book, but I'm glad you mentioned that, because maybe we can do some digging and
uh-huh.
if there's a sequel to the book, we'll try to develop that story a little more because it's a pretty good story. And, of course, Rolling Thunder eventually was adopted by the Shoshone tribe because he married into the Shoshone tribe. And so he was able to combine the medicine from a couple of different traditions, not only the Cherokee and the Shoshone, but two or three other tribes as well.
Hopi.
Yes, absolutely. He just learned wherever he could learn something, whenever he found somebody who would teach him, he would just apprentice himself to that medicine person and learn whatever he could. And one time when I visited him, he took me into his medicine trailer. This was an old trailer that somebody had given him that had served its purpose. It was no longer fit for the road, but he used it to store his medicines. He had probably a couple of hundred of compartments and sacks and bags with herbal medicines in them. And he even had Chinese herbs that Chinese medical practitioners had given him, and he had pharmaceutical samples that Western physicians had given him and taught him how to use. And he said, you know, I'll use anything if it'll help people. And he always referred to how I doctored people, and he said, I doctor people, I'll use anything that I can to make them feel better.
Yeah, I remember the first night I was there, he sent me over one of his sons. I don't know whether it was Mala, probably Mala, but they put us up over at Meditante in an old mobile home, and I remember there had he told Mala, he said, take some Lysol spray, spray that mattress and turn it over because, you know, we just had an AIDS patient sleeping on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was memorable. It was a cold night, too.
It was Mala who put me in touch with Kerry Garnier, who the photographer whose picture appears on our book, and Rolling Thunder's son, Buffalo Horse, actually was interviewed for the book. So both of them helped out in their own way to make the voice of Rolling Thunder as authentic as it possibly could be. We also did a lot of research on some of the Indian treaties, and as you know, the U.S. government broke most of the treaties. But the Indian treaties played a very important role in providing a context for the life that Rolling Thunder lived and sort of the limitations that were put on him as he grew up. And he, from the first time that I met him, he made such a big thing about Indian babies being forced to live with white parents, and that was very true. Many county welfare departments decided that the parents, the Native American parents, were too poor to raise the children, and so they put them into white homes, and that was accepted practice. And you have no idea who ended that practice. It was Richard Nixon. Yeah, he pushed a bill through Congress because he was a great admirer of Native Americans, because his football coach in high school had been a Native American. And despite failings and misdeeds, he really did more for Native Americans than most U.S. presidents have.
How interesting.
Now, well, that's one of the surprises people will get if they read our book, The Voice of Rolling Thunder, because we make a note of several U.S. presidents and the way that their laws and legislation and actions interacted with Rolling Thunder's life. And, of course, Rolling Thunder knew all of the leaders of the American Indian Movement, AIM, and so we have some political anecdotes about that movement as well.
Are you aware that Russell Means just passed away?
He just passed away. He was a great, great man. I just never met him, but I know a lot about him, and I've read his work, and he was extremely wise and did a lot for not only Native Americans, but the whole country.
My friend, brain fart, excuse me, George P. Lee, it was a friend of mine. He was on the first bus of children that Rolling Thunder would have said were kidnapped out of the Navajo Nation. But he went and lived with LDS families and was raised in the Leonite Relocation Program. Rose to a doctorate of education at BYU, and he rose to be a general authority in the Mormon Church. But they
really?
did not treat him very well, and he wouldn't invite him out to go organize stakes and do other things, and he developed a real animosity. I can't remember exactly when, but he wrote a letter to the Salt Lake Tribune accusing the church of genocide. And you know, and then he ran for Navajo tribal chairman.
He
was winning, and there were charges that were trumped up from 6 years previous, accusing him of a minor sex crime, and he was sidelined and he moved back to as far now. And you know, when I used to speak with him in the early 90s, he was a principal at Tuba City High School, and I'd call him up and we'd talk about the prophecies, and you know, I'd call at lunchtime, but after a couple hours on the phone, I'd say, "Hey, aren't you, you're principal of a school, aren't you busy?" He said, "Oh no, I love to hear it," you know, and
sure.
But they got him, they slandered him, and you can see his picture, you know, on the registered sex criminals, and it was really something. But he left Christianity, went back to the old ways, and
that's just remarkable.
Yeah, he's quite a fellow. But that's a sample of the. And he wasn't too happy with the Mormon Church, and kind of looked at me askance because that's where I was coming from in 1992 when I 91 no 1990 when I first met him.
Well, back in those days, the Mormon Church actually would not let African Americans hold positions of leadership.
Uh-huh. Till 78.
And, of course, they were under great fire for that. And then, miraculously, the leading elder of the church had a vision, and in the vision, God came and said, "Time has come to let black people take leadership in the church." Well, that vision came just in the nick of time before the Mormons were absolutely disgraced.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, interesting thing, the oldest general authority in the LDS Church was 95 years old, and can't remember his name, but he was very, very well known. He went on talk radio in Salt Lake, just like Rolling Thunder did, and he says, "What you're hearing from the brethren is total falsehood." He says, "The only reason why we're giving the blacks a priesthood is that we built a temple in Sao Paulo, and we could not find any priesthood leader that did not have Negro blood." And
remarkable.
He says, "I was there." He says, "There was no revelation. The brethren got together, and they said, well, we all feel good about it." So that's what happened.
Well, there you have the inside story, and I'm not surprised.
Yep. That is what happened. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand the basis, you know, for that. Or what Brigham Young said, you know, this is all about Cain and Abel. And basically,
right.
he just said, until Abel's posterity have a chance to receive all their blessing, he says, Cain's posterity will not get theirs. And in 1961, when President McKay was buttonholed in the press, they said, "When are you going to give blacks a priesthood?" And he says, "It'll never happen," but it did happen. And but you know, the whole, because I've gone and done a lot of studies in Judaism and the Torah, I realized that the brethren were completely misunderstanding what happened back in those days, because they did not follow up and do what they were supposed to do. And become one people with the Jews. See, they believe they're the house of Israel, and they didn't have enough information, and they were dealing with some real myths, and so that whole thing about blacks and the priesthood as a total bollocks and never should have happened. There were other things that the errors that were made also. But
that
anyway,
was pretty remarkable.
But yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but just going over some.
Not at all. It's fascinating. I'm sure your listeners found it interesting too.
Yeah, well, I tell the same stories all the time. I'm trying to remember, and of course, there's other stories. I wish we could have gotten Brian Wilkes on here tonight. Brian was a newsman back in those days, and Brian Wilkes lives in Kentucky. He's another Cherokee, and he knew RT much more intimately than I do. And I've even met one woman who claims to be another child. She didn't realize it for some time, and Mala doesn't recognize her. And
oh, really?
Yeah. Her she lives in Timberon, New Mexico, and her mother, was knocking around Nevada back in those days in the 60s, and her mother never did tell her who her dad was. And she said that RT came to her in a dream and said, "I'm your father." Well, the interesting thing was, is back about, I guess it's about 10, 12 years ago, she was living here in Tennessee and had a dream about some terrible flooding that was going to happen. And, of course, and she was Mormon at the time.
Uh-huh.
And she went to her local authorities and told them what was going to happen. And it kind of scared them, so they brought in, when they had their next regional conference, they had 30 people come in and listen to her. And then she was flown to Salt Lake and met with the half of the general authorities at that time. And she told me that President Gordon B. Hinckley told her, she said, he told her, "You sound a lot like Rolling Thunder."
Is that right?
Yeah, and then she moved out west, and you know, the week that I got back here to Tennessee, they had unbelievable flooding around Nashville, the Grand Ole Opry. I mean, they're still digging out from under that flood here.
Good grief.
And but her name is Shahawin, and
how do you spell that?
S-H-A-W-I-N.
W-I-N.
She runs the New Self-Love Foundation in Timberon, New Mexico, and I'll give you her...
send me the address. That's fascinating.
Absolutely.
To know about.
Yeah.
What part of Mexico is this in?
She's in Timberon, New Mexico, which is...
New Mexico.
It's near White Sands. It's up at about 7,000 feet. Very, very remote area.
Fine. Well, our listeners won't be interested in those details, but send me that information by email.
And she does.
Down.
And she does medicine work.
Good for her.
It's just amazing. And
well, you know, Rolling Thunder is what we call a dream walker. He would walk into people's dreams, and we have several examples of that in our book. And he would give them advice. He would do the healing in the dream. He would make predictions, and usually these were people he met, but once in a while there were people that he had not met, but that knew about him, and apparently he knew something about them, too, because he showed up in their dreams.
Well, I've seen him a time or two.
Really? How about that?
Yep. He's never said anything, but he's kind of made it clear, hey, you know, I'm watching, you know, I got my eye on you, that kind of...
Well, he had quite a gaze, you know.
Oh, gosh.
Take a look at those eyes. You'll never forget them.
You know, as far as genealogy goes, back in the late 90s, a book was published called Heart of the Eagle, and it was published by a professor in Western Tennessee State University, I believe. But it was the very first genealogy of Chickamauga Cherokees.
Really?
You know, the Chickamauga... We had, because the Chickamauga kept their alliances with the British, They declared war on the 13 fires in 1776, and there was a northern and southern wing of the Confederacy, and if they had managed to control the Mississippi River, the American Revolution would have been lost. And
it's incredible. Mm-hmm.
But they this is the people that they were. He's a pope. His last name was Pope, and there were a lot of Tory Englishmen. We had black slaves that ran to us. A lot of amalgamation of a lot of different people. But RT used to talk about the Celtic religion, and he really felt that there was an affinity between the Scots-Irish and his people. And in talking with people like Ed McGaugh, who's written five or six books on Lakota spirituality, he totally agrees that there had to have been some kind of exchange between Celts and Native people. And, of course, now we know the Swedes were here 1,000 years ago. A lot of different people came to these shores. The Welsh were here about 1100 at the time of the height of Cahokia. And it's just amazing. The history of Native America is being rewritten.
Well, there certainly have been a number of speculations about the commerce between Europe and North America before Columbus made his famous voyage.
Uh-huh.
And there's even some artifacts that have been found that are being examined that are sort of material evidence that
uh-huh.
Europeans came over much earlier than 1492.
Uh-huh.
Not only that, but there's a pretty good documentation that a Chinese navy
uh-huh.
came and visited the coast of California
uh-huh.
and even Latin America much earlier than 1492, maybe 100
uh-huh.
years earlier.
No, it was
900. But, you know, the Chinese did it in a very different way. They didn't come and conquer like the Europeans did. They came and visited and collected information, collected herbs and animals, and they were very, very polite to the Native Americans and respected them. And right here in San Francisco, archaeologists have discovered an anchor from a Chinese ship
mm-hmm.
in the bay. This was several years ago. But now there's a historian who has been writing a whole series of books on the Chinese Navy and its very famous visit to the Americas. It sort of has been lost to history.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in opposition to the very polite behavior by the Chinese, when the Europeans came over, it was to conquer and it was to convert. And, of course, they brought over all of the European diseases, and that was sort of both accidental genocide and deliberate genocide. But there were probably as many people in North America as there were in Europe at the time, and there were some Native American cities were just as big as London and the European cities.
Uh-huh.
Now, they took a different form, but there were groups of people living together. And with all of the diseases that were spread and all of the deliberate massacre of the Indians, a lot of that lore and a lot of that civilization just got lost.
Uh-huh.
And all of the trauma that was inflicted got passed on from generation to generation, and I think that it's only in our time that we're seeing a great revival now of the Native American traditions, and Rolling Thunder certainly played an important role of that, making
uh-huh.
Native Americans proud of their tradition and going back to the ancient wisdom and showing how important it is for contemporary times, especially in terms of the ecological crisis that Rolling Thunder foresaw. And he didn't call it global warming, but he was talking about it back from the first time that I met
uh-huh.
him. And it's all there in not only the prophecies, but in common sense, in the way that Native Americans took good care of the land.
Well, you know, he mentioned that he believed there may have been a migration from Mars. And and the interesting thing is that the... of course, we're beginning to explore Mars now, and But there, back in the 40s, there was a woman by the name of Lucille Taylor Hansen. She wrote a book called He Walked the Americas.
Oh, of course. I read that book. It was a fascinating one. Right.
But she also wrote a book called The Ancient Atlantic. See, her father...
I don't know that one.
You can get it. It's a nice, big tome of... perfect, you know, for your coffee table. But you can get about $30, a very nice used copy. I'll tell you how. But anyway, in the book, she said that she was gifted an alabaster box one time, and that she showed this book to Asa DeLuigi, who was a traditional Apache. And he looked at it, and he said, "May I touch it?" And she said, "Yes," and she handed it to him. And he opened it up. He says, "Where is the dirt that was in here?" And she said, What do you mean?" He said, "I have seen one of these boxes before, and it carried the red soil from the old red land that we came from. Rolling Thunder told me that there were stories that see," he said, the Cherokee Nation came from a lot of different places. You know, we had originally over 80 clans, and now that's kind of gone down about 7. But he said, you know, he believed some of us actually migrated from the stars. But that was an interesting connection that I learned, because I'd heard him say what he believed about Mars, and then what L. Taylor Hansen had to say. I suppose we'll find out someday, because I think they're actually thinking about re-terraforming Mars.
Oh, really? Well, that could possibly be.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like Brian Wilkes, when I interviewed him, we talked a lot about Rolling Thunder, and he said, you know, he says a lot of things Rolling Thunder said, he says, they just sounded crazy to me. He said, but, you know, he said, I just listened, and... he said, the older I get, he says, the more I see everything that he said is coming to pass.
Well, let me tell you, this is a comment that I've heard from several people who were pretty young when they had contact with Rolling Thunder, and now they're middle-aged, but they look back at his statements, and they make more and more sense as the years have gone by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did a couple of excellent. He did a video with Bill Running Wolf that had at one point, and there have been the Healer of Manitante was another video that he did, and
a pretty good one. I've seen that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want anything really published. I talked to a. Another woman by the name of Elizabeth. Now, she used to be a writer in Los Angeles, and she wrote under the name of Ryder Wolf. And she lived in Hollywood. She was up in her 80s. I knew her back in 2004 and 5. And she had a lot of information, because she used to spend several hours a week on the phone with him.
Really? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He apparently had a plan for educating young children, and shared that with her. And she was going to pass that back along to the family. I'm not sure whether she did or not. She had some real health issues, and I lost track of her. And
well, that's a shame, because I would like very much to know about Rolling Thunder's educational program, and if that's written down someplace, that
uh-huh.
needs to be published and preserved, because
uh-huh.
I'm sure it would make a lot of sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was just an updated version of the Little Red Schoolhouse, is basically
yes.
what she told me.
When I went with Mickey Hart to save Rolling Thunder's life and get him to come to San Francisco and get medical care, his Rolling Thunder's daughter was with us, and she found envelopes that had never been opened. They had just accumulated in one of the rooms, because he was sick and the people taking care of him didn't open the envelopes because they were not family members, but Morningstar did open the envelopes, and she found several hundred dollars, which was very, very useful and very important in terms of paying the people who were taking care of him, and also much later when he returned and buying some good medicine for him. But she also found a folder, and in the folder it said Rolling Thunder Stories for his book. Now, I don't know whatever happened to that folder, because I'd never got back to that house again after Rolling Thunder left for California, but I had actually gotten an agent to get Rolling Thunder in advance for writing a book, which, of course, he could have done with the help of some of us, and he never quite got around to signing the contract. But the fact that he had this folder indicates that it still was in his mind, and he was always saying, well, I've got to improve my memory and remember these stories better. But, you know, when you procrastinate, sometimes life or death catches up with you.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of stories that maybe we'll never know about, but the stories we were able to collect from people and put in our book, at least those have seen the light of day, and people, we hope, will derive some insight and wisdom from those. And the stories that you're telling on the radio are fascinating. I think that your listeners are getting a good dose of Native American wisdom from just listening to the two of you.
Well, we've been on the air for about an hour and 15 minutes. Would you like to take a pause for the cause?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a 9-minute and 21-second excerpt from the Thinking Aloud DVD with Jeffrey Mishlove. It's called Rolling Thunder, The Unity of Man and Nature. And we'll be back in 9 minutes and 21 seconds. We'll turn the mics off.
Columbus didn't discover America. There were people here already.
That's
a couple
for sure.
Of my boys wouldn't put that down. They were going to school. I had to go up and have a chat with this little principal, and I made him stand on the other side of the desk while I stood on or sat in his chair. And finally, I had to stand up. And I explained to him, I've taught my children not to lie. Now, you're trying to make a liar out of him. And he finally caught the message. I told him you were working for me. I paid taxes. And so you're going to listen to me. And you're not going to teach my children to lie. And so he made an exception of my boys. But he flunked them.
Well, it seems,
got even with them.
It seems to me that the lie of the larger culture is much bigger than who discovered America. It's as if we've lost touch with something very, very fundamental that Native peoples, such as yourself, have kept alive.
Well, they stole most everything. And somebody asked me, what part of America is it that you, isn't there any good thing that you like about this country? I said, yes, that's that part that they stole. And it is very true, even though they stole most everything they could get their hands on, our land, children, women, whatever, they took it, and the natural wealth. Left us very poor people, a lot of our people homeless in our own country. But the best things of all, that they had no value, was our way of life. They copied our Constitution from the Iroquois Confederation. That's in the legal code books.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they didn't invent that. They had nothing like it before. But they couldn't live by it because their heart was not, and their thinking was not in that kind of a order to live by something like that. and a real freedom and a real peace, they couldn't do it. So they violate it every day by their different interpretations, just like they do their own Bible and different good books. Yeah. And so, and losing these values, they also lost a great deal in how to take care of this land. I like to teach about that. That's our job. We delegate. We don't say we own the land. The grandfather great spirit, the one they call God, is the one that owns the land. And so that we are, though, the caretakers of this land. Nobody else can do it. But there's people that can help. And we'd like a lot of people like that that would help. If we try to take your job, we'd make a mess of it. Somebody else's job, it wouldn't be too good, because you people have the technology, and we're all needed. All of us are needed to work together. And so there won't be any such day as next war of violence. Also that the land could bloom again. And it does in the desert where I live. And I can prove it right now. It looks like a jungle in that area right around my house. And it's green for 100 miles around. On every side, different deserts, real deserts. But in the area where we live, I've seen even what they call weeds. No such thing as a weed, really. I've seen them dance when there was no wind blowing to the sound of our drums and our singing. That's how powerful that is, too. And so that we have rain, and even without the rain, these plants are still green. It's amazing. I come down here sometimes, I see everything dried up sometimes in the past. And one time they was having a drought, and the water commissioners over here in Marion County wrote me a 2-page legal-size type letter and invited me to come down here and get some rain that time. That's some years back when it was really drying up down here. And I turned it down. I had a good laugh. You know why? Mm-hmm. They didn't say one word about what they're going to do for me or my people. We had a good laugh, and then my people did, and I could see it laying in their yards over there. A lot of rusty old pipe. And yet they didn't say one word. We could have used that for irrigation pipe. Put it back together, we could have used it. But it's not for me to beg or to tell them. They never offered my transportation. Even. They didn't say where I was going to stay or how I was going to eat. Those people didn't. Now, I know they wouldn't ask anybody else to do anything like that. When they go to their doctors, they pay. You bet they do. Handsomely. I didn't ask them for no payment. I don't go begging nowhere. And they can't treat me like that. They want, they want, they want. And they want an old Indian to work for nothing. Some of those politicians are the worst. Let's put it that way. I don't want to talk too much about politicians.
Well, there was a huge thunderstorm here in the San Francisco Bay Area 2 nights ago, which is extremely rare. We never get thunder and lightning. And
some of my good friends been after me. They've been calling me up there. I got many friends throughout the area here. Besides, I like the theory. But when my friends ask me for help, that's different from some politician that ain't going to do nothing to appreciate. And yes, I've been dancing as hard as I could, doing a few other things. It's my brother over there, that old storm god. And that's the way I got my name, for that matter. I used to scream like a little eagle, what they told me, even when I was a baby and doctor, run right out in a storm. Yeah, I love it. And that lightning flash, there's a lot of power in it, I'll tell you. And I know some Indians, I don't like to talk too much about what I can do myself. I tell people I don't do nothing. That's a great spirit's power. But I do have a say-so sometimes, and I can request, you know, what. And if people deserve it, why, they can have it. We like to help, too, in our way of doing things. And I like to, it's beautiful music when that thunder rolls. You can catch some of the water right after the storm. Catch it in pots, pans, any way you can, and drink it. You don't need nothing to get high with. You don't need anything else. You can feel that energy go all the way through you. I do that sometimes. And have my feathers out there making the thunder roll and bringing the lightning down, and then stand right there in the middle of it. I'd look around behind me. Here would be a lot of my family and my people there too, looking up at the show, you know. No, we don't need no heavy artillery, nothing like that. We've got 80,000 more times energy, one bolt of lightning, and there was in the first atomic bomb what they dropped on Japan. Mm-hmm. 80,000 times more.
Well, folks, we're back with Dr. Stanley Krippner. We're talking about the voice of Rolling Thunder. And I want to send out this salute to Rolling Thunder and all the Thunder people in the spirit world and here. Listen to this. Hope. Now that's power.
That sure is. That's listening to the Rolling Thunder.
That's correct. And you know, I could see him in my mind's eye, and I could see him sitting there, and you know, he's just grinning right now. He's grinning. He's excited right now. I don't know how I can do that. It wasn't quite as clear as vision as I had the one when my first wife passed away. I was literally driving, and I was on the freeway, and it was like a crystal vision. It was, and I could see the traffic moving in both directions, and I was driving along next to the Salt Lake, and we knew she was going to pass soon, and I saw her laying down wearing white, and all of a sudden she sat bolt upright. She had the unbelievable look of surprise on her face. And ended the vision. And what I saw with RT a minute ago was just about like that. Not quite as clear, but he's with us. He's listening in spirit.
Well, I'm glad you had that excerpt from the interview with Jeffrey Mishaloff, because that gives your listeners a chance to hear his voice and his words firsthand. That's just great.
Mm-hmm. Well, some years ago I put up kind of a little, well, shrine's not the right word, but the website's down right now. It's prophecykeepers.com/thunderpeople, or you can just do a search for Thunder People. Like I said, the website's down right now. We're having some issues, but I had some other videos, one other, and a lot of pictures, like the picture of Amanita Sequoia, who he studied with, and he was the last herbalist of the Eastern Cherokee. But enough. Tell us more.
Well, good heavens. Jeffrey Mishaloff's interview was classic. We actually have some other excerpts from that interview in our book, The Wisdom of Rolling Thunder. And that interview was on television. It brought Rolling Thunder into the homes and into the minds of many, many people. It was a very effective interview, and it shows how articulate Rolling Thunder was in talking and describing his belief system, imparting his wisdom, and also his concern for the land, for the animals, for the birds, for all the living creatures on the earth. And it's this connection with nature that has been lost by so many Americans, and once they regain it, once they're back in touch, it's like coming home. They find a abode and roots that were there all along. They just never realized that they had it. And unfortunately, a lot of Native people lost that connection too. And it's just now coming back and becoming a part of their lives, you know, not a day too soon.
I had a dream once. I moved to live with a small group of Cherokees in southern Missouri. And I had a dream. In the dream there was an Indian woman, long black hair, and she pointed over at a tree that was growing. See, we had a traditional OC in grounds, traditional Cherokee grounds there. But there was a tree in the dream, there was a tree growing on the edge of that clearing. The tree had every single, it was a tall pine tree, and it had been cut, the top was cut off of it. Every single branch had been cut off of that tree. It looked like a telephone pole.
Oh,
but you know what was growing out of that?
What?
New branches, new leaves.
Isn't that something? What an inspiration.
Just like Aaron's rod in the Bible.
Right.
And that just told me that even though everybody thought this whole situation was dead, it's coming back. And you know, the prophecies, the Hopi prophecy and other prophecies say, of course, the biblical prophecies jive with the Hopi prophecy when they say that, the Hopi said that all the old medicine societies that had gone extinct would come back to life. And of course, the Bible version says that all those things that have been hidden since the foundation of the world would be shouted from the housetops. But then there would be a restoration of all things as spoken of by all the holy prophets. And so that's what I've done. That's what I got into this, is I started collecting prophecies back in the 70s and 80s. And in 96, I published a 16-page back-and-front typewritten newsletter. And I just gave it away. And I told people on it, hey, if you want to recopy this and give it away, fine. And, you know, within 6 months, I got a letter from Australia saying, hey, we want more. And I got
That's
a letter
incredible.
I got a letter from your colleague, Dr. Sprinkle, the UFO.
Yes.
Leo Sprinkle. He said, I want more.
Did a great service by publishing that monograph. It really was extremely important for people.
So I just got on the internet in 96, and I pulled together whatever prophecies were available on a website, and they're at NativeAmericanProphecy.com.
Yeah, that's a good website, and your listeners can plug right in on that, and they'll be surprised at some of the prophecies.
Tell us some more.
Well, I'll tell you a story. How many minutes do we have left?
We can go, if you would like to go as much as another half hour or more, you can talk as long as you want to.
Well, it won't take half an hour to tell the story, but this is another story about eagles and rolling thunder. And he was, as I said before, very much attracted to eagles, and from time to time he claimed he could turn himself into an eagle if he wanted to get someplace very, very quickly. And back when Mickey Hart had a ranch in Novato, California, I got a phone call from him, and he said, you know, I saw rolling thunder in the woods in back of my house collecting herbs, and I didn't even know he was in town. But we're going to prepare a dinner so that when he comes by for a visit, we'll have a nice dinner waiting for him. Why don't you come up for the dinner? And I said, fine. So about 5 o'clock, I headed up to Novato, and there the food was waiting for RT, but he didn't show up. It was getting dark, and he couldn't collect herbs in the dark. So I said, look, Mickey, let's phone Nevada. And Mickey said, no, he's right here. He's coming any minute. And I said, let's just phone Nevada and see what we get. And so Mickey phoned Rolling Thunder's number, and of course I was going to be all scientific about it and say, Rolling Thunder, what were you doing at 9 o'clock this morning? And if he said, well, I was up at Mickey's collecting herbs, well, there you are. That would be pretty much of a verification. Well, Mickey was so excited to hear RT's voice, he said, RT, what are you doing in Carlin? Nevada, I saw you in the woods collecting herbs this morning. And there was a two-second pause, and then RT said, well, you know, I had this patient I was doctoring, and he needed some herbs pretty badly, and I knew that there were herbs in back of your house in the woods, so I just turned myself into an eagle and flew up to the woods, collected the herbs, and I'm back now, and doctored him, and my patient is doing fine.
Uh-huh.
Well, I tell people you can take that as you want, but you have to remember that medicine people can be pretty good tricksters, and they're tricksters in the best sense of the word, because they say things similar to what RT once told me. He once told me, sometimes you've got to trick people to make them feel better. And I thought, well, Rolling Thunder knows a lot about the placebo effect and the role that people's expectations and belief systems play in helping them get over a very, very serious disease. And I saw examples of that over the years, because the healing RT did involved a lot of preparation and a lot of little show business frills. He would sometimes dress up in a white suit or wear feathers and get his group at Meditanti to do chanting and drumming while the person was preparing for the healing. So he would pull all stops out to help somebody get better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, in the Hebrew tradition, it is taught that at any one time on earth, there are either 36 or 48 people on earth that are able to travel without their suitcase like this. And they're called, in that tradition, they're called Tzaddik, and that's the root of the word that we get saint from.
Oh, that's very interesting. I didn't know that.
Did he ever tell you the story about going to the cave in North Carolina and his encounter with what looked to him like a serpent? I believe it was Ukatina, the dragon. Did he ever tell you that story?
No, I'd like to hear it. I'm sure your listeners would like to hear it, too.
He said that that he was ushered to a certain cave in a certain place in North Carolina, and he said there was there. He said when he went in, he says it looked it was a massive animal, scaled, and of course this would shock your average Christian. You know, I'm going to sit there going, what? You know, he said, but he said you could petition this entity. He said you could ask one wish, and you could get whatever you wanted. He says if you wanted to be lucky in gambling, if you wanted to be lucky in any way, he says the being would, and like I said, I believe this is Ukatina, which is the dragon of the Cherokee lore. But he said that the dragon or the being would open its mouth and stick its tongue out, and you would have to reciprocate. And once that was done, whatever wish you wanted for your life would come to pass. And of course, he asked for the gift of doctoring people, and he got it.
Well, that's quite a story. That's just remarkable.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and Brian Wilkes, when I spoke with him.
Yes.
A few months ago, he said, yeah, he heard that story too. And some other, he said, Brian would, as far as the new book goes, he would be a real fountain of information. You think I know
stuff
about...
Oh, he would be. I've got to get in touch with him, that's
for
sure.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. You think I know stuff about RT? He's forgotten more than I know.
Well, this book is selling so well, they want us to do another book, and I think we're going to have no problem getting material, especially if I can get in touch with people like Brian Wilkes, who just sounds like to have, he has a fountain of information on RT.
Oh, yeah.
But, well, you know, Everlight was spent a lot of time with RT, and she tells a lot of her stories in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And she also did a horoscope for Sidney and the Morning Star, when Sidney and the Morning Star was born. And thank heavens she saved that horoscope, and it had some pretty specific things in that sort of forecast the line of work that he'd go into. He's a graphic designer. He knows a lot about computers. And so the horoscope indicated that he'd become a master of technology. He would not go the medicine path. He would be of service to people and follow the red road in his own way. And that's what he studied at school, graphic designing, and now he's making a very good living in that line of work. And he's a pretty good writer. People really enjoy the parts of the book that he wrote and the ways that he describes how his grandfather's work impacted him.
Mm-hmm.
And,
there's so many people like Peter Coyote and hundreds of people. It's just amazing how many people he affected.
I didn't know that Rolling Thunder knew Peter Coyote.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I heard Peter Coyote in an interview talk about it one time.
That's remarkable. I've met Peter Coyote. I should have asked him about RT.
Uh-huh.
I'll have to see if I can contact him again. That's just remarkable.
I'm getting older. I'm 57. Nothing but you know, I do have a misremember, but I'm pretty sure it was Peter Coyote. And, and there were other celebrities, you know, besides, you know, the Grateful Dead and Bob Dylan and others that met him and that he had a tremendous influence on.
Well, he did. I know that Bob Dylan really enjoyed the sunrise ceremonies that Rolling Thunder would do. And I've been with Rolling Thunder for a number of those ceremonies, and of course they are sunrise ceremonies. You get up early in the morning so you can see the sun rise, and Rolling Thunder would do those in a very, very special place on Mickey Hart's ranch, and Mickey and I and some of the other members of the Grateful Dead and their assistants and their entourage would get up and we'd go up to the top of the hill, and Rolling Thunder would have fire lit. And as the smoke came up from the fire, he would start praying to the four winds. And then he would give the blessing for the day. And then we'd, you know, all sit around and pray in silence. And then the fire would be blown out and we'd traipse down the hill again. Well, Mickey got Rolling Thunder to allow him to record that prayer to the four winds, and he put that on the first record album that he did independently, and the record album is called Rolling Thunder.
Uh-huh.
It's an all percussion album, which is very appropriate to the music, and you can hear the thunder in it as these drums rattle and play and in synchronization. And it's just a beautiful tribute to Rolling Thunder that he had an album named after him.
Uh-huh.
Of course, Rolling Thunder had a lot of good musicians at Metatanti and a lot of good drummers, and they did a number of what we could call jam sessions for entertainment at night, and it was really never a dull moment when I was there. There was always something exciting going on and a lot of hard work. The cooks at Metatanti were very, very skilled, and they knew how to put a good meal together, and people would go into the kitchen and would learn how to cook, both men and women, and they would become pretty good cooks themselves. And then, of course, Rolling Thunder would teach them not only about spirituality, but teach them a lot about nature, and would take them around and show them herbs. Remember from that television show that Rolling Thunder says there's really no such things as weeds, because what one person calls a weed, another person can call a healing herb.
Uh-huh.
And so he knew what plants could be used for, And some of the things that we call weeds actually could be cooked and made a pretty good meal or a pretty good stew.
Mm-hmm. As long as you had vegetable oil, you know, no one in a famine would ever not pass away because they'd be able to go out in the backyard and even grass, but, you know, cook it up in a little vegetable oil. And but speaking of the food, they had I don't know who was cooking those days that I was there, but I remember the stir fry that they.
Oh,
that
you bet. The stir fries were wonderful. Absolutely. They were.
I remember filing into the kitchen. You know, you go in there and to get fed, and you'd look up on the ceiling, and he had shelves way up toward the top of the ceiling, just big enough for banana boxes, and they were all, even in his house, you know, they were all up there where they could be high and dry, and he would dry herbs up that way. And those banana boxes, of course, have the big holes in the sides. And a lot of people don't know, he actually bought an old brothel, and it had a lot of bedrooms in it. And he also told me the story of there was a man that followed him all his life. He felt that he was being kept under surveillance by the government.
Oh, yes. I'm sure he was.
And he said one day he was sitting on the edge of his bed, and all of a sudden he just got the urge to reach down and either scratch or tie his shoe, and he said a bullet came through the wall. And he said, had he not moved, it would have gone right through his head. And he said, of course, he kept bags of he was gifted a lot of tobacco, and he would tack them up on the wall for protection. And he said, tobacco's for protection. And when you give an elder tobacco, you're blessing him with protection.
Well, you know, I saw the bullet hole in his wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that same story.
Mm-hmm.
So he bent down at just the right time.
Yep. And that, of course, Carlin is a big gold mining town, but he lived out on the end of town. But he had visitors from all over the world, and he had herbs growing there that shouldn't be growing in the desert. Nobody could really account for exactly what was going on there. And, of course, he would come out, and they had a parachute silk tied up into the trees, and everybody could sit under them, and they bring him down and down the ramp, and he would teach. And the first thing he would say is, you know, I love children. And he says, but please don't bring them here. He says, I'm getting older. And he says, if you interrupt me, it may be 8 or 9 years before I get back to the subject. But, and I had, you know, at one time I brought my 8-year-old son with me, and he was good. But yeah, I just wish I had paid more attention and had learned more. But hey, whatever became of Frank, the fellow that lived there with him that was from Lebanon?
Yes, I remember that guy from Lebanon, and I really don't know what happened to him.
He was like
and
royalty.
If he, I really don't know.
If he told me if he had stayed in Lebanon, he'd have, you know, because he was a you know member of prominent family, but he stayed there. And they also told the story about someday they felt that there'd be a great destruction on the West Coast, and that the native people would organize an army to go in, and there would be a lot of dead people, and they would collect as many children and babies as they could, and raise them up in the ways of Mother Earth, and it would be a more or less a do-over for us. And and then, of course, there was also a vision of a possible large meteorite strike in the Nevada desert, and they felt that if they got people together, that they could ward that off. And of course, now you know there were people here talk of Nibiru or Planet X or whatever, which is really interesting because you know back in the early '60s. On the front page of Popular Mechanics magazine, they were talking about Planet X, and they were saying, hey, don't worry about it. It won't be here for 50 years, but now there's, you know, who knows what's going on because there's a massive cover-up concerning it. And I kind of wonder now if that wasn't what Rolling Thunder was concerned with.
Well, he might have been. That might be it. Sure, who knows?
But
at least it's, you know, he put it out there, and
yep.
Time will tell. Time will tell as future events reveal themselves.
That's true.
Well,
I'm out of stories. I don't know about you.
Oh, I could go on all night, but people can just read our book, and they'll get tons of stories. I'll tell you one more story, though, before we have to say goodnight. And that was when Rolling Thunder was in Europe. And some Germans organized a big shamanism conference. This was actually the first of many, many shamanism conferences here in Europe. But this was in Alpbach in the Austrian Alps. And, of course, they wanted Rolling Thunder to come. He was the most famous of all of the medicine people that came there. And they invited Don Jose Rios from Mexico. He was a Huichol shaman. And technically, Rolling Thunder wasn't exactly a shaman. He was more of a medicine man because that was his function. And nevertheless, he and Don Jose got along pretty well. I introduced them to each other, and Don Jose spoke nothing but Spanish. So, of course, we had to have a translation going on. But they had meals together, and they got to know each other pretty well. And then on opening night, the organizers of the conference wanted Rolling Thunder to do the opening ceremony. And he said, well, that's very nice of you to invite me, but Don Jose is my elder, so he should do the opening ceremony. And that was true. Don Jose was about 90 years old at the time, in pretty good health. So opening night came, and of course there were hundreds of people in this huge auditorium, and Don Jose was doing a blanket or mesa ceremony. He had a big, huge blanket that, of course, in Mexico they call a mesa. This is the ceremonial word for it, like the mesa in nature. And through a translator, he asked people to put a personal object on the blanket. Now, the translator didn't include some very, very crucial words. And Rolling Thunder was sitting by me, and he said, you know, people shouldn't be putting money or weapons on the blanket. And I picked up from Don Jose's Spanish something that sounded like you don't put dinero on the blanket. But people did. They thought that would bring them good luck to put money on the blanket, and some people put knives on the blanket. Well, the reason that this is so important is that Don Jose and his crew began drumming, and they were going to get the blanket to levitate. Now, it wouldn't levitate physically, but it would levitate in their mind's eye, and then this would bring the conference off to a good start. So he and his drummers actually drummed so loud and so long, they started to sweat. And Don Jose was saying, the blanket isn't moving. The blanket isn't moving. And, of course, it was too late to take the weapons and the money off. But they worked and worked and worked. And finally, there was a little bit of movement. And Don Jose said, look, that's the best we can do. And the people in the audience, of course, were very, very gratified. They were very, very happy. And they came and they took their personal objects back. And that got the conference off to a good start. But then a week later, after the conference was over, Rolling Thunder did his own workshop in Germany, and I was there with him. And he started out the workshop with the blanket ceremony, and he specifically said no money and no weapons on the blanket. So he and the drumming crew that he brought with him from Metatanti did some drumming, and within 10 minutes he said the blanket was rising, and that got the conference off to a good start. Now, again, it didn't rise physically. It rose as a metaphor. It was the vibrations that rose. But still, this was important in terms of getting things off to a proper start. And then the rest of the workshop went very, very smoothly.
Well, and I applaud you for your work in shamanism. There is another website. And by the way, there are links to Stanley's Facebook page and his website, and you can also Google Dr. Stanley Krippner, and there's some other information out there about him. But anyway, would love. I really appreciate you coming on, and I do want to plug. We have kind of a constellation of websites: NativeAmericanChurch.us, OriginalGhostDance.com, KetuaSociety.org, ProphecyKeepers.com, I was just trying to think if there are any others. Anyway, I'd like to invite you to visit those, and if you're so moved to support us financially, it costs about $40 a month to keep this on the air. And I'm disabled. My wife and I are living on one fixed income, so we'd appreciate any help. But anyway, we really appreciate you, Dr. Krippner. If there's anything we can do in the future to help, you know how to get a hold of us. And thank you so much.
You're very welcome, and I'd like to encourage your listeners to donate a little money to your cause, because you do very good work, and to visit your websites. This is a wonderful way to preserve the wisdom of Native people, and you can get quite an education from websites like yours.
Well, thank you very much. Like, ProphecyKeepers.com is the website that supports blogtalkradio.com/prophecykeepers. And like I said, it's down right now. We'll have it back up tomorrow. But other than that, I guess we'll just play our outro, as they say, and we'll let everybody go on their way. Thank you very much, and everybody, good night.
Good night.
Dr. Stanley, I'll give you a call or an email sometime. And thank you also, Mark, our co-host, Mark Borcherding, who is a fountain of information. And to everyone, we'll wish you good night.
This is Yasa Sago, a seventh-grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
Let the truth